This is a replay of the Wednesday night, August 19th WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call, and I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday, evenings from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip. For the best deal and good customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe. It's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We have 3 hours to spend together, and I hope to hear from you, but the first hour will be an absolute joy, I can tell already. It's been one of those days. Wait a minute. I say wait a minute because this is the second Coca-Cola that has opened on everything. If I had show prep, it would all be history by now, but fortunately, I just wing it. In any event, without further ado, and before anything else untoward happens, and I do expect it at any moment, we welcome Steve Probst to WGN Radio. Steve, how are you?
What a setup. I hope I'm not the reason.
Oh, no, it's been like this for a couple of weeks. Windows 11 and I have been fighting over networking, and that's not an unusual story, I'm sure. But in the mix, everything has possibly gone wrong that could. And so, today has been spill everything over everything day. So I'm not 100% sure, but I spilled nothing over what was the first rock and roll record, and I do want to get to that. But before I do, I've been trying to order Ruben Molina's book, and as you know, the Facebook thing seems to be out of print. But I found a site that has it, and I thought to myself, well, how dangerous could this be? But, because you just never know what you're getting on these sites. But I figured I'd ask you, have you ever heard of Sonic Market Shop?
No, that's one I've missed, but you can order it from Ruben. Even though it was sold out, he told me that he re-upped the order and has books on hand. So
is that Post Office Box 6074, La Puente, California 91747? Can you do it online?
I memorized it.
Yeah.
It is La Puente, so yeah. I assume that's the good address, and I would contact him through Facebook. If you're a Facebook friend, you can direct message him and check it out that way.
Okay.
Tell him that I told you that he told me that he re-upped the book and actually added a couple of sections or a few additions to the new. I guess you'd call it improved work that I think is constantly evolving.
Oh, great.
Cha-cha-cha.
Great. Okay. You know, I went to his Facebook page and, of course, saw your review, among other things, and did not see, because in the past he had a thing where you can order it, and all that. So I will have somebody who does Facebook message him. So I lurk under other people's IDs. So,
yeah. I think he removed the order part because he did run out, but then he ordered a reprint, and it's actually a couple of things that aren't in the original one, so
good.
You get an improved version. maybe he'll have it next time. We can talk about it.
Yeah, and he is making the rounds, lots of events. But one that I thought was really interesting and absolutely free is on August 30th, Sunday, from 2 to 3 at the L.A. Library downtown. And he's going to be there along with Melissa Duenas, who is doing the East Side Story project, which I don't know much about, and Oscar Garza, who is with USC's Arts Journalism Program. But do we know anything about the East Side Story project?
No, I don't know about that. Actually, that's a series of LPs
that
came out with various lowrider.
Yes, I have them.
Oh, you have them.
Well, all of them.
Tell me about them.
Yeah, no, I have all of them. And as far as that goes, but I so she was creator of that. So it's just the vinyl and the CDs of that. Interesting. Did not.
Yeah, and Oscar Garza, he has a interesting take. Anybody that deals in used records has come across name tags on records. This record belongs to,
right,
Sally Smith, and it oftentimes gives an address, in some cases gives a phone number. Well, he made it his goal to write to some of these people and send them photocopies of the label and say, is this person still here, and what can you tell me about the records? Now,
this is great.
I think that's going to be part of his presentation, so I won't give it away. But that's sort of a variation on what Reuben did. You know, it's what you find on the label that wasn't on the record when it was first pressed up.
Wow, that is such a great idea, because all of us who have gone to the swap meets and everything else, and, used to be come January when the kids would go off to college, mom would take the records to the swap meet unbeknownst to the kid and sell them. And I got all the Yellow Atlantics that way for a dime each, which is pretty amazing. But I often wondered, a good smattering of my records have exactly that. Usually they were those return address label type things where it gave your name and address. And I've always wondered, who is Joanne? Well, all that kind of stuff. That's fascinating that he found them.
What cities they're in can be sort of helpful, too. One time I was looking for records in Santa Ana. I remember going into this thrift store, and I found some very rare records, including the L Rays on Checker, the early variation on the Dells before they were the Dells, Darling I Know, great record, and somebody's name and address and phone number. I think they were in Fontana or somewhere in the Inland Empire. So I couldn't resist. I had to call up and say, do you have any more records? These were so great.
Yeah.
And the woman on the other end of the phone said, oh, my God, these are records that are stolen from us. I didn't want to.
Oh, God.
I did not want to get involved in her little soap opera, so all I did is I gave her the name of the thrift store, and I say, if you go down there, you might find what's left of the records that once belonged to whatever relative it was. This was a long time ago, so I don't remember the particulars, but I don't think she wanted her records back. But,
right, and you were not about to do that, I don't think.
Well, it didn't work out that way, but I did tip her off as best I could where to find the remaining records, if there were any. But just great stuff.
Oh, yeah. What a great project. Well, that'd be a good date, and it's moderated by Oliver Wang, who apparently is a collector and a sociology professor at CS Long Beach.
I was thinking of going myself. I'm not sure that date is really a day I can show up there, but if things fall into place, well, maybe I'll swing by and check out the happenings.
Well, it's interesting.
Reuben will draw a good crowd.
Oh, absolutely. And an hour later, actually two, I guess, after that, he'll be in Echo Park at Story's Bookstore doing a signing.
Oh, he's pretty active. He just came back from Mexico and he's been known to take his record spinning show to Japan and more or less around the world. So, guy's pretty active.
Good for him.
He knows how to promote. Yeah.
Now, interestingly, we had a caller, Ken, who calls regularly, who decided he's forming a doo-wop group. He's looking for members. And he decided he'd call themselves the Enchantments. And I said, well, it is an original, and I could name 10. But when I started to look around, I came up with the Enchantments, who were on Pharaoh, an Eddie Davis label, with an answer record to Farmer John. Are you aware of this group?
Yeah, I can't tell you who was in it. It's the with two E's in chat, of course.
Yes.
That's a super rare record and pretty expensive record. It was probably the hardest to find and most sought after Pharaoh, F-A-R-O, label record of Eddie Davis's very active workshop.
Well,
you know, it so happens I don't have a copy. Darn it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was interesting, of course, because those Pharaoh records, Eddie had had the desire to put the group faces on all the records, as you know, because you've seen them. Well, there were 10 members of this group.
Right.
And they're all there, right there on the right-hand side of the record. So
it's called the Floating Head label.
Right, exactly. And that's exactly what it was. No necks, but...
Right. He had a black singer named Chick Carlton.
Sure.
Whom he teamed up with a couple of Mexican-Americans because he thought Chick Carlton was a very light-skinned black singer, so he thought that the skin colors would complement each other. That was, Floating Heads again. You know, he had to...
Yeah.
He had to take care of business that way. I think he called the group the Majestics. There
right,
were several
right, another T-H-E-E. Groups. Yeah. And you mentioned Chick Carlton. He wrote I'm in Love with Your Daughter.
Ah, yeah. Well, okay. Chick Carlton was part of that operation and, really a nice guy. I talked to him in the past. I don't know if he's still with us, but last I heard... I think he was in Vegas.
Okay.
Well, everybody ends up in Vegas.
Oh.
I mean, everybody.
Well, with California taxes, it'll be more than everybody soon. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, if in doubt, they're in Vegas.
Right. That's about it. So interesting stuff. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. I want to mention the Sea Crane Company. And if you like what we're talking about, then you obviously like radio. And if you like radio, well, you should know about the Sea Crane Company, and maybe you do. But right now, I want to mention the CC Pocket Radio. It's a great little transistor radio. It'll fit in your purse or your pocket either way. And you'll celebrate National Radio Day in style. That's tomorrow, by the way. And the CC Pocket is great. Firstly, I'm hard on my toys, and it's indestructible. Mine still plays, which is a miracle. It's very lightweight. It's durable. It's easy to hold. It's got rubber sides and a pocket clip. But what it's really got that makes this radio terrific is it's got terrific reception, AM and FM. It'll beat most anything else other than other Sea Crane radios completely out of the game. It's just terrific. It's got 5 memory button presets, there you go, and a timer and an alarm and a dial light and all those things. It's also got the weather band and weather alerts, so it makes a good little emergency radio too, and easy to operate, no learning curve. You can go to ccradio.com anytime, ccradio.com. Look at the CC Radio Pocket. If you cannot go online, well, they've got great customer service, and that's good if you've got questions too. And that's 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE, 800-522-TUNE. And if you can go online, though, definitely ccradio.com. It's a repository of information as well as great radio products, and the CC Pocket is just one of them. If you do that, you tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio.
She got
one and only record by the Enchantments, the A-side anyway, on Feral Records. It's WGN Radio. We're talking to Steve Propes. And I should first ask, do you have any projects you're working on right now?
Yeah, I'm always working on something, but it's sort of a long-distance project. Let me point out about that record.
Yeah.
That's a favorite. I think it's expensive because it's a Northern Soul.
Yeah.
Want list type of record. It's sort of Farmer John with strings and a smoother delivery instead of the more basic rock and roll delivery. So I can see that being a Northern Soul favorite. That dance beat, that
right.
backbeat. Brought you in this case by Eddie Davis. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that Northern Soul, that was my biggest disappointment when I first found out about the All Nighters. I thought this was so good because it was my hours and everything. And I thought, how neat all these. And then I found out that the beat they're looking for was because they were all on amphetamines.
Yeah.
And that's why the cops shut them down. Because I thought, well, why would they shut down Wiggins Casino? You know, all that. And that was the deal. And, how sad.
Short lifespans.
Yes. Yes, exactly. But Northern Soul is still, even though the all-nighters are gone, Northern Soul still is big. So while we're speaking, I just went to Disco's to see. Yeah, it's pricey, all right. Available from, individual sellers, from $811 to $1,500. I don't like it that much.
Yeah, it's a great record, but I'll let others enjoy the vinyl.
Yes,
You can check out the YouTube or whatever. But I hadn't thought about it that much, but it has a lot of the elements of Farmer John without the cranking rock and roll. It's a lot smoother. It's sort of like a Drifters type of arrangement. I was thinking about the Floating Heads label.
Yeah.
RCA actually participated in the game when they put out a promo of Neil Sedaka singing The Diary because they wanted disc jockeys to know it wasn't Little Anthony.
Oh, God. Well, at least it wasn't as bad as Wayne Newton when they wanted them to know he was a guy. So.
Yeah, right. But when I first heard The Diary by Neil Sedaka, I thought, I think Little Anthony did have The Diary first, and Neil Sedaka covered him. So, RCA just wanted to let him know that Little Anthony is not with RCA. It's a wholly different person.
Well, that's interesting, because I had always assumed that Neil Sedaka wrote it with Howie Greenfield. So I guess...
Well, maybe he did.
Yeah,
but,
so if,
that doesn't mean he recorded it first.
Absolutely right. And he would have loved for Little Anthony to be a hit. And that's where we'll pick it up right after the news right here on WGN Radio.
You care for.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and there it is, the first recording of The Diary, Lil Anthony and the Imperials. And we're talking to Steve Probst. I told you he knows all. And if you've got any questions or comments, very often he asks me stuff, and I don't know. Well, Steve probably will. So 888-876-5593-8888-R-O-L-L-Y-E. And it's interesting about that, because looking at the dates of this, Steve, this would have been when Neil Sedaka was just a staff writer for Donnie Kirshner. And so
Well, actually, he had a couple of things happening before that. I think his first record was I Go Ape.
Which did nothing. Yeah, he absolutely did. But as far, yeah, as far as big hits under his own name, I guess it was because George Goldner, who of course put it on end, they pitched pitched Little Anthony, but George didn't like the recording. He didn't think the production worked, and he wouldn't promote it. So with that in mind, from what I understand, that's when Neil Sedaka went himself to RCA. And
okay, well, that makes sense, but I guess if RCA is interested in you in those days, you don't give it a second thought. You know, you follow the example of...
Well, exactly.
People like Elvis Presley, right, for instance.
Right. And just distribution alone, getting a label that has distribution, that's everything. So,
Now, there's a lot to the Neil Sedaka story. And, I guess you'd call that that sort of doo-wop, but from doo-wop to disco, he was... His career was pretty impressive.
Well, and it was really a Cinderella story in the 70s, because he was very cold for a while there. And then when Kevin and Tennille recorded Love Will Keep Us Together and it got so high on the charts, that really restarted him.
I heard an interview with him after he passed, and he credited Elton John.
I would agree that. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. He's 100% right. And there wouldn't have been no Captain Hill recording it if it weren't for the Elton John connection. But, you know, as far as hits in this country, I think that's what did it. And I like some of his 70s stuff, like Amarillo and stuff. It never really hit. And I loved when he redid his Breaking Up His Heart.
Yes,
as a ballad. It was just terrific.
So. Yeah. It was sort of originally a cha-cha. And, he slowed it down, and it really worked. So, now and again, lightning can strike twice.
Well, absolutely. And I admit, when we talk Wimpy White records, there aren't many that I love, but my favorite Wimpy White record is still Alice in Wonderland by Neil Sedaka. Yeah.
Okay, well, it's known now across the board.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what's my favorite Wimpy White record. We're going to have to...
I'd love to know.
Postpone. Yeah. Maybe, I wouldn't call Angel Baby a
No.
In fact, I just saw on the internet tonight, and I guess it's no secret because he publicized it, my friend Ruben Molina is starting a project that involves Rosie. So
I saw that too. And that record is a mystery. It's a mystery how it became as popular as it did and where it wound up and all those things. You know, to the uninitiated, they play it and say, "What the?" But man,
yeah, really.
It absolutely. You know, it was one of John Lennon's favorite records, though. Just loved it.
And, the final 50s records that were played by K Earth, if you can believe this, K Earth was once a 50s station.
Yeah.
Hard to believe when you listen to it now, were Tequila, La Bamba, and Angel Baby. Those were the last holdouts that kept getting action on K Earth before they became rock of the 80s or whatever they are now.
I'm not surprised, not at all. And you know, even in the 70s and the early 80s, they went away from that. They were a little too hip for the room. And then in the 90s, they came back and added that stuff. But another mystery was when they hired Huggy Boy, who arguably was a terrible disc jockey, but had tremendous music taste, and wouldn't let him pick his own records. It's like, why would you do that?
When they shut down KRLA, you remember KRLA?
Oh, very well.
he was the His show was the only one that actually got ratings. So,
Earth
booted that, effectively shut down that OnePlus by, you know, sort of consigning him to whatever. You know, I never really talked to him about it, but I don't think it was a real pleasant experience for him.
No, it paid the bills, period, and you can't argue with that. But there was obviously no soul and no love. But just the idea that you'd hire a guy who really was a rotten jock and then not let him do the one thing he did, which is pick the music, that's crazy.
Yeah, you know, Huggy, that's the role Huggy should have been in charge of. You're right, because he knew L.A. music backwards
absolutely.
And forwards.
Yeah, you know, Art LeBeau gets a lot of credit, and rightfully so, but the reality is that Art LeBeau was a businessman, and he understood how to market it and how to treat it as a business. Huggy Boy was clueless about that way, but arguably, if I had to put the two of them in the room, I'm going with Huggy Boy.
I'll tell you something that was pointed out to me, and I haven't verified this, but it's been said that at least towards the latter part of it, maybe the earlier part of his career, too, Art LeBeau specialized in records he had a piece of.
Well, of course. And he'd buy, he'd buy whole labels, you know, like when he bought Calico and things like that, of course. And he had the clubs that he owned and the labels. And, I mean, he absolutely was a businessman. And he came up with Oldies But Goodies, you know, a lot of things that he did that were wonderful. But it was always from a business sense. When he was so big at KRLA, there was always someone behind him. Maybe it was a Sherman Cohen or whoever, someone who really knew the music.
Yeah, and I don't think he would deny it either.
No,
I
mean, he didn't. You're 100% right.
Yeah, what's the problem? I mean, come on, I am a businessman.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. Yeah, so. But it killed Huggy because, of course, you know, we've talked before when Huggy Boy was in trouble for not paying taxes, and he said to the judge, I didn't know I was supposed to give the government a cut. It was the most sincere line he ever said, and that kind of summed his business acumen right there. But LeBeau, yeah, he marketed all the way, and I don't deny him anything because without him, some of those records we would have never heard.
Yeah. You're right. Particularly, yeah, the first couple of Oldies But Goodies LPs. The other thing that sort of drove me crazy is he'd put out Volume 1 10 years later and all the tracks would be different.
I know. Well,
thank you, Art. Yeah. Totally, you know, heaven and paradise suddenly disappeared.
Right. Yeah, no, those are the details. Oh, actually, Stan in Dearborn wants to join us. And Stan absolutely knows his stuff, certainly the doo-wop stuff. He had a radio show in Detroit for quite a while. So, Stan, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh, and hi, Steve.
Hello.
Glad to hear you on again.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, one of my favorite L.A. groups is Arthur Lee May and the Crowns.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And I've got records on, like, RPM and Specialty and Dig, so many different labels. I was just wondering, also because he was a baseball player and only recorded in off-season, is that why he had on so many different labels?
Also why he wasn't a bigger star.
Yeah.
Because he didn't devote his entire career to making himself a star. You know, I think he actually preferred the baseball part of his life. And, you know, one heck of a nice guy. I mean, him and Richard Berry were running partners, and nobody has ever said anything bad about Arthur Lee May.
Yeah.
He was on, you're right, he was on Dig Records. He was part of the J.O.'s, Johnny Otis, sort of impromptu group that did a song called Tough Enough.
Right.
And also did that LP on Dig that, you know, pretty collectible. And you're right, he was on RPM and, you know, a whole bunch of labels. And, Specialty, Gloria was with Richard Berry singing. It was more or less a duet about Gloria Jones of the Blossoms. So that's my little Arthur Lee May pitch.
Yeah, and of course, Richard Berry was one of the Crowns. So,
that was my next question. I have on Flip, it's got Richard Berry as co-writer, or the writer on Hey Pretty Girl on Flip.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, if you got that Flip record, that's one of the few Flip records I don't have. And that's a pretty pretty hard to find record. So congratulations on that.
Were they delayed?
You know, I did an interview on Channel 11 here in the L.A. area with Tony Valdez, and he wanted me to find somebody that was around in the 50s to, you know, celebrate a theme. And I contacted Arthur Lee May, and he came down, and we did an interview together with Tony Valdez on Channel 11. And it was the last time I saw Arthur Lee.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Was he promoted as a baseball player as well, you know, during his career, like on the radio? Was he popular in L.A. as a ball player as well as a singer at the time?
I don't know how popular he was in L.A. as a ball player, because in those days, sports didn't get the saturation it does now.
Oh, yeah.
And he never played for an L.A. team. Of course, there weren't any L.A. teams, major league teams,
at the time, anyway.
He started out.
Right.
I think he was drafted in the expansion draft by the Angels in 1960.
Right, but the Angels weren't there in 55.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He was on Flair originally, I think, and then Modern. And so,
I don't know about the Flair part.
Well, wasn't he part of the Five Hearts and the Rams?
Oh, yeah, but at the Rams.
Yeah, I was talking about under his name.
Oh, under his own. Yeah, okay, yeah, no.
Yeah, his first stuff was on
Modern.
Yeah, Modern.
Yeah, and then RPM and Specialty and Dig and Flip and Cash and Jamie and Tower and Ampar and on. Buddha, I think was the last.
You've got it all memorized, don't you?
Yes, I do.
On Cash, it just says Lee May rather than Arthur Lee May.
Yeah.
And then on Specialty, it's Arthur Lee May and the Crowns.
Right.
And some of them give the Crowns credit and some don't. But I think
that's a source of confusion, too, because there was another ball player by the name of Lee May who played, I think, for the Astros. So people,
and the Orioles,
conflate the two names. The one record that Arthur Lee May
It isn't the same person?
No.
I don't think so.
It's too different.
Really?
Maybe that's why Lee May. Well, I don't know, because he came a little bit later, and he might have recorded too. That's where there's that Lennox record. I don't know if that's Arthur Lee May or Lee May trying to, hitch on to Arthur Lee May's popularity.
Yeah.
The one thing I remember about Arthur Lee May, and I talked to him about it. He did a song called Truly, which was imitation of Sincerely. It wasn't the most original material, right, but it was a pretty nice record.
Well, here, I just looked up the problem here about Lee May, because I was saying, I thought they were the same person. Well, they are, but then there was another Lee May without an E at the end of his name who was a baseball player.
Oh, okay.
So,
that's what I'm thinking of.
So some of the Arthur Lee May stuff was credited to Lee May. So if there's an E at the end of it, it's Arthur. If there isn't an E at the end of it, it's not. So I know cliff notes are needed for this.
You solved the mystery of the ages.
Yes, how about that? God, I know next will be the Grand Unified Theory. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. Stay where you are.
Okay.
And we're running out of time, and I just hate that. I'll be quiet on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, we're going to forego the bumper. Hard to believe when we're talking about music, but I don't want to interrupt either Steve Probst or Stan from Dearborn. So there you go, guys. Carry on.
I had Arthur Lee May's baseball card from the 1957 season when he was with the Braves, and on the back of his card, it showed him with a microphone and a record surround him, and like a caricature of him.
Oh, well, that's great.
I always remember that. And I think he was on
the Let me
roster.
Ask you about Detroit. How ubiquitous was Fortune Records? It's a big deal nationally. I know know that among collectors, but how potent was Fortune in the Detroit area during your day?
Fortune was Detroit.
Yeah.
That's all you could put it. And then when Motown came around, well, Fortune was still Detroit until Motown got national.
Did you ever go to the Fortune store?
Yeah. Yeah, it was on 3rd Avenue. It was a kind of a rundown place, but I didn't go to it till the 60s. I didn't hit the 50s.
Well, I'm sure they were still. They had a Village of Love was a National Hit 64.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I think it came out in 61 or 2. They had a...
Okay, 62.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they were still very active then. So I understand that Devorah Brown was a pretty pretty nice person to, you know...
She was just a little bit flipped out, I thought.
Yeah, but you know, all of the acts to a person say she treated them all well, and they were always welcome at her house, and if they were having dinner, they'd be just as invited as anybody else, so there was never a barrier there with her. And it didn't even occur to her, which I thought was much to her credit. And whatever creativity was in that couple, it was her, much more than her husband. But her son, I guess, got the stuff. And I know the building's not there anymore, and neither is the first one. But they're
right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, her daughter lived out here, not too far from me, and she contacted me and sent me sort of a care package.
Oh my God!
She was trying to re-promote the label. They actually did repress The Way You Dog Me Around and called it The Way You Dog Me Around 1970. So, you know, on colored vinyl and everything. So she was trying to put out a product that would interest people at her level, but I think she passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. But no, Smokey Robinson, when he was younger, actually said, if I could sing, I'd be Nolan Brown.
And Nolan Strong.
I'm sorry, Nolan Strong.
Yeah,
Nolan Strong. Yeah, yes,
she's noted for opening up the studio in the back and just letting the guys go in there and say, "Okay, guys, do your thing." She had nothing to do with the recording. They were totally in charge of what they were doing. And when it sounds like sizzling bacon in the background, that's because that's what they were doing.
Yeah, because it is. Exactly. New meaning to bacon fat. I cannot believe we've ended the hour, so we have to have part two when you come back, Steve. And Stan, always good to hear from you, and I expect you'll be in attendance as well.
Yeah,
thank you.
That was great.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it. And Steve, yes, I'll follow up on Ruben and look forward to our next conversation.
Okay, will do. Okay,
all right, and there we'll pick it up next hour. Free for all. If it's on your mind, it'll be mine. We can continue this discussion if you want. Coming up on WGN Radio.
Old friends, after all of these years, just old friends. Through laughter and tears, old friends. What a fine, what a priceless treasure.
James. So there it is. That was Jeannie last night. Jean called and wanted to hear Old Friends. And the Gaithers did it, and it's interesting because they mostly did it live. In fact, those are some of the best versions of the song they have. And in that, you know, Gaither music and Gaither and Friends, on that was Kevin Williams, Bill Gaither, Jeannie Johnson, Vestal Goodman, Jack Hess, and Larry Ford live. So there you go. for Gene. 888-876-5593. We'll get to Ms. David in Muskegon and hopefully you two coming up. But meant to go over something that I don't think we discussed this last night. I don't think we got to it. But that is the Burmese python. Correct me if I'm wrong. We might have covered it. But I know I was talking with John about it for sure. And, yeah, the Burmese python is an invasive species, and it has been invading Florida like nothing else. I guess it was kind of first sighted in the 1970s, but small, you know, likely due to the pet trade or accidental or intentional releases by pet owners. You're talking about a snake that is native to India and lower China. But and Florida is home to more invasive animal species than any other state except California, as far as that goes. There's a lot of it. But the Burmese python is unique in how much it has proliferated and what it can do. The pythons now have a breeding population in South Florida and are among the most concerning, to say the least. They compete with native wildlife for food, and actually, native wildlife is food. Human beings could be food. These are pretty awful as far as that goes when it comes to being a problem for you. And, you know, when they're eating raccoons, well, between 1997 and 2012, the raccoon population in Florida declined by 99.3%, opossums by 89.9%, bobcats 87.5%. But the thing is, these things get very large. And I mean very large. They can get up to 250 pounds. Usually don't, but they do. They can get out as long as 20 feet. Usually don't, but they do. And like other snakes, their jaws aren't exactly hinged together. It's more like elastic. And they can stretch their mouths to the point of engulfing something with, 30-inch waist. Yeah, right, exactly. And I don't know that any individuals who are, you know, 2 feet in humans have been consumed. Deer have, as far as that goes. And once the Burmese python gets a big meal, it doesn't have to eat again for literally months, I guess. Yeah, when you think about it. But with so many of them there now, and so many animals being threatened, not to mention humans, they're trying to find ways in Florida to do away with them. And they've actually started to have contests. And the Python Challenge, I think the first one was in Davie, which is Fort Lauderdale area, just on the edge of the Everglades. And that was the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission and its partners launched a month-long Python Challenge. To harvest them. The contest featured $1,000 for catching the longest snake, $1,500 for catching the most, and they continue with that. And in fact, it's gotten larger. So now they're offering a no-cost training program that aims to create a network of people able to search for, identify, and capture, of course, and humanely kill these creatures. So now these days, it's up to $2,500 for the most pythons caught. I'll sit it out, don't you know, but there you have it. So 888-876-5593. I think we just got a thunderstorm warning here. I know I was looking at my logs for my radio stations in Globe, Arizona earlier, and they had about 20 alerts today. So there were a lot of them. Meanwhile, John just went swimming, and we're only, as I'm sitting here, only about 120 miles from there, but it was perfectly clear, and I think now we're under a warning. Well, there you go. 888-876-5593. David in Muskegon, welcome to WGN Radio.
Yeah, well, you know, I was thinking last night, and I didn't have time to call you. ZZ Top actually did a version of Brown Sugar along with Little Richard.
Yeah.
Theirs was completely different. It's on the ZZ Top album, ZZ Top, which was released back in 1971.
Yeah, I heard it on the X. That's the most ZZ Top you're getting out of me.
Oh, okay. I understand. Yeah, because I remember you saying, and I remember hearing that song off of Fandango.
Yes, it was. Absolutely. It was on Fandango. That's 100% right. And I loved their spirit. Didn't particularly like the way the song was done, but loved their spirit and had to play it. I mean, any group that remembers Dr. Brinkley is good enough for me.
Yes, and you know, I can't remember ever getting that here in Michigan, where I'm living, or in Indiana.
Because you're too young.
The X, that radio station.
You're too young. In your lifetime, it wasn't running the 250,000 watts, but it used to. And when Dr. Brinkley was on it, you're looking at the 1930s, so it's a long time ago, after he lost the license in his home state, I think was Kansas. Then he went to Del Rio and, you know, got on XER at the time. It later became XERF when Wolfman was there. But if you were listening in the 30s, you'd have heard it.
Oh, okay, XCR, you could never get that.
Well,
here in Michigan.
Well, when it was XCRF with Wolfman, it had 250,000 watts, and, you know, arguably it could get into Michigan, but it wasn't going to be a regular listening thing.
Now, what frequency was that?
Oh, 1570.
Okay, 1570, XCR.
Uh-huh.
Now,
and in your lifetime,
in the 60s?
Yeah, XCRF, Wolfman Jack was on it.
Okay, XCRF. Now, is there any way you can get that online, or is it ceased broadcasting?
Well, it exists, but not with him, obviously. He's not alive. Like all of the border blasters, it's mostly paid religion these days. I don't think they'd be online.
XCRF. Now,
yeah.
What were they back in? Was it top 40?
Well, it was a combination. You see, again, the border blasters made their money by selling blocks of time to preachers. And that was the big income. And then in between that, they would have hosted shows, like I say, Wolfman Jack every night. And Wolfman Jack would be there, and he'd be selling all manner of products, you know, the baby chicks and the guaranteed fly killer and the Last Supper tablecloth. And I'm trying to think of what else I bought. But there was one product that guaranteed male virility. Don't believe it for a minute. It was worse than Dr. Brinkley. But in any event, they would hawk this stuff. And then Jack would you know, sell record packages and stuff like that. And then from there, he went to XERB, which was just south of Tijuana. And that's where, that's where he made his fame, because Lucas, who did American Graffiti, used to listen to him on XERB. But XERB only had 50,000 watts. XERF had 250,000 watts.
Okay, and that was basically paid airtime, whoever could pay for the airtime.
Yeah, yeah, and when whatever it is that he did, that Jack did to really, Bob, I should say, his real name was Bob Smith, but what he did to really piss off the Mexican government, I don't know, but suddenly they outlawed preachers. They claimed that it was corrupting the Catholic youth of Mexico, and overnight he lost everything. I mean everything. And then after he was totally defunct and completely off it and away from it, suddenly the Mexican government said, oh no, preachers are fine. So I figure that it was intended to get rid of him, and it did. But to this day, preachers, and in some cases, you know, until recently, you could turn on a border blaster like an XEG in Monterey and, you know, hear some oldies show, you know, with oldies packages, all bootlegged, of course. But I don't know what Rosarita Beach is doing anymore. That became, from XERB, it became 1090 Express. And as recently as the 90s, they were still hawking the record packages, but I don't know anymore.
Okay. Now, when they were hawking the record packages, what kind of music were they playing?
Oldies. Oldies, the stuff we were talking about, like with Steve Probst, my stuff.
Oh, okay, the same stuff you play.
Yeah, not the stuff you like. Not a chance.
Oh, okay. Jimi Hendrix.
No,
or anything.
You would never hear that. Never. No.
Oh, okay, or Steppenwolf. Or
never.
Like that.
Not a chance.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
No,
so
it was pretty much R&B based. And it would be old, obscure soul and R&B oldies, you know, like we were talking about with Steve. Angel Baby is, you know, a big, big record everywhere. The stuff that the East L.A. Guys liked is what would be, you know, the Paradons doing Diamonds and Pearls, you know, that kind of stuff. Not
I love that song.
You do?
Yes.
That's amazing. So anyway, that's what it was.
Okay. Okay. Now I'm straight on that. And you know, another thing I wanted to ask you. I was looking up Bob Salmon, who owned a couple stations in Modesto, and after he left WKMI, I was wondering what was the top 10 songs on WKMI. You can get the, I know you have ARSA, the top 10 songs for August in 1985.
Well, I don't. So, you know, I'm sure you could find it if you researched it, but it wouldn't be much different if you're, you know, than it would nationwide. Very few stations were playing anything that would be tremendously local.
Okay. Now, what do you have on Billboard on for 85 for August?
Okay, it's about the time I was leaving Billboard. Let's see. Yeah, saying, I can't take it anymore. All right. Let's see. And, of course, you know, Billboard has many, many charts, not just the Hot 100. They'll have an album chart, and then they will have, you know, R&B and country and everything else. So what chart are you talking about?
Top 40.
Top 40, okay. Oh, that I could actually tell you. Hang on, though, because that's across the room, and I don't want to get up right now, to be honest. But hang on. Don't go away. I will get up. Just not this second. All right. So, yeah, I know lazy is us. But the other thing is Kyle is a first-time caller, and, you know, we defer to first-time callers. So he's in Minnesota. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Good evening. How are you?
All right. How about yourself, Kyle? Thank you for calling.
I was fine-tuning the AM dial and stumbled across you and your last guest and thoroughly enjoying your conversation back and forth and sharing all your music knowledge. It was quite entertaining.
Thank you.
You did leave me hanging a little bit because you either ran out of time or you changed the subject. You were asking him if he had any current projects going on.
Yes, and he does have current.
Distance one.
Yes.
But he never really explained it. So yeah. Now curiosity is killing me and I'll never know.
No, but you will know because Steve joins me every quarter. And we actually were talking about it last time as well. But so just listen from time to time and we'll let you know when Steve's going to be on again. Or Raleigh.net, Raleigh.net. We'll always tell you what the lineup's going to be.
Sounds good. My question I was going to ask, and I'd be curious your pick, if he had any coveted LPs or 45s that he was seeking or that he had in his collection or you have in your collection that were from other genres. You know, like maybe a country or jazz, but maybe a foreign language record or anything like that.
Well, I know in my case, I'm a sucker for bossa nova and not the stuff you would necessarily hear in the States, but people like Toquinho and Vinicius, things like that, or, you know, so that's sort of my weakness if as far as other genres. But late 60s country, I loved it. And early 60s top 40, Wimpy White Records, loved them. So yeah, there's some.
Can you list a few of those artists that you covet in your collection?
You know, Marcos Valle, Valle, and I just loved him. And like I say, Toquinho and Vinicius, and of course, you know, the master, Jobim, obviously. But there were so many recordings, and some of them were not really my style, and some of them were. I think that album he did on A&M called, I think they called it Wave, was just a tremendous album as far as that goes. Now, as far as country, my favorite country was Nat Stuckey. And, don't pay the ransom, honey, I've escaped. And that was great. And don't give me no plastic saddle, let me feel that leather when I ride. But many, many others as well. So now tell me about you. Are you from the Twin Tundras originally?
Am I from what?
The Twin Cities. I call them the Twin Tundras.
No, not originally, but I do occasionally try to grab a hold of some of the old Soma records.
Oh, okay, yes. Amos Heiliker, absolutely. The Heiliker brothers, they were classics in that market and the best local distributors ever.
Yeah, and it's fat. And K Records was another.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. Oh, that's fun.
Outfit as well. But thoroughly enjoy your show. And it's, you know, after so many years, I still stumble across new music that was recorded way back then.
Yes.
And I particularly like, you know, when I discover and find and explore and get a first listen to some of that old stuff from all genres.
Yeah.
So I appreciate the show.
And I hope you'll call again. Thank you.
Okay, you're
welcome.
All
right, good
deal.
All right, so we will play something obscure, I am sure. Nick, maybe a request or maybe just something I like. Maybe even some Ticino and Vinicius, I don't know. Coming up on WGN Radio.
Velho calção de banho, o dia pra vadiar, um mar que não tem tamanho, e um arco-íris no ar, depois da praça caindo, senti preguiça no corpo e numa esteira de vime, beber uma água de coco é bom, passar uma
James. Well, I'm not alone. Millions of Brazilians love that as well. It's almost an anthem of sorts for Ticino and Vinicius. And it was an interesting story. Vinicius, of course, at the time this was written, it was over 50 years old, over 55, actually. And what had happened is he had met a girl in a bar, immediately fell in love with her, and she was living in Salvador. And so he immediately moves there to Itapua Beach, actually, marries her, and he wrote a poem. And Tarde afternoon in Itapua, and so there were no music or anything to it because he was planning. And again, he was very revered. He'd done things with Jobim and everybody else, and he was going to give it to someone well known. But at the same time, he was doing collaborations with this 24-year-old kid no one had heard of. the kid who was Ticino, he saw the poem and he said, I want to set lyrics to it. And Vinicius said, no, you're not up to that task. And anyway, he was reserving it. And so bottom line is Ticino stole the lyrics and, you know, swiped him out of the typewriter and went to either Rio or might have been Sao Paulo. But anyhow, he took like 3 days. He wrote out the music, and he came back and played it for Vinicius, and Vinicius, you know, was pretty upset that he'd stolen this, but when he heard it, he couldn't find any fault with it, and so in fact he said, yeah, that captures it, that's what we're going to release, and virtually everybody has covered that record in that song in Brazil, but that's Ticino and Vinicius first recorded it. But I mean, when I say endless covers, I mean everybody from Gilberto Gil to, you know, I can't even think. Liz Regina, probably Catano Veloso, you name it. But in any event, great record. So gave me a chance to play something I usually don't. Now, we're back to David in Muskegon, and embarrassed about this because I had the 80s book right here at my feet, so I didn't have to go very far. All right, so sorry about that. Now, I've got the 80s. Oh,
Right. Yeah, 1985.
All right, 1985. You want to give me a month?
August.
August. August what?
Let's see. Yeah, about August 20th.
Okay. Let's see what we got. We can do August 24th.
Yeah, that's fine.
Number one was The Power of Love by Huey Lewis. Number two was Shout by Tears for Fears. Never Surrender by Corey Hart. St. Elmo's Fire, John Parr. Freeway of Love, Aretha Franklin. We Don't Need Another Hero, Tina Turner. Summer of 69, Bryan Adams. If You Love Somebody, Set Them Free, Sting. Every Time You Go Away, Paul Young. And What About Love, Heart was number 10. There you go.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I remember those songs.
I'm sure.
That's what WKMI actually was playing.
Well, yeah, everybody else was, too. They're the top 10 records, obviously.
Yeah, and they was playing, like, This Gun's for Hire by Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, obviously. They're playing hits, of course. They're a top 40 station playing hits. And that would be, no matter what market you were in, it would have been the same.
Yeah, it was a little different here in Muskegon, though, actually, some of the stuff they were playing. Here than in Kalamazoo.
Well, you'll always hear some local flavor, but the core of it is the same.
Oh, okay. So the core of it is the same.
Yep.
Yeah, because I noticed up here they were playing some different stuff. Like up here is where Mr. for the first time I heard it.
Yeah.
Golden Wings.
Yeah, which became a big hit, of course. But sure, that'll be the case. Yep.
Yes, and because it had more of a local flavor, even though this is a smaller market.
Well, if it's programmed live, that's what you're going to get. If you've got somebody sitting in the market, it's going to reflect what they feel their taste is for the market, of course.
Okay, I understand that. Yeah, because they got that. And you know, a song that I cannot find on Amazon Music or anywhere. I don't know if you can find it. Do you remember a group called John Butcher Axis?
Oh, God. Not that I'd play it.
It's a song called Among the Axis. It was in 85 it was out.
And have you tried YouTube? Yeah, I've got it. Along the Axis, by the way. It's not Among, it's Along. And
Along the Axis.
Yeah.
I haven't tried YouTube.
Well, it's all over the place. And of course you have to know how to spell John Butcher Axis. It's J-O-N, not J-O-H-N. And Butcher is B-U-T-C-H-E-R. And Axis is, of course, Axis. So that's, if you spell it right, you can probably find it. I think it was on the Live in Boston album from 1984.
Oh, okay, because they were from Boston, I believe.
Yeah, right. And so...
Along the Axis. Okay, and Life Takes a Life was another one they did.
Yeah, right. All that stuff is going to be on YouTube. It's not obscure.
Okay, because I tried getting it on Alexa, and you have to have a video for it.
Well, we've talked about that before. You have to ask somebody who deals with that. I don't.
Okay, I'll have to ask... Okay, then, Raleigh,
okay.
Yeah, because I really enjoy your show, if I may say so.
Well,
and
good
I
to have
thank you.
Thank
you for everything.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks. Appreciate it, David. Bye.
Yes.
All right. So 888-876-5593 would be 8888-Raleigh. And that will take us to John in Covington. Welcome back to WGN Radio, John.
Hey, Raleigh. I want to shift the gears a little bit, if you don't care. There was two people that passed this past week. One of them was the guy was an innovator for having surgery. Tommy John, the baseball pitcher, he passed away, and he should be in the Hall of Fame, and he's not. He's got 288 career wins, 2,245 strikeouts, and he's not in the Hall of Fame.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. There's several people that should be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh yeah.
And they're not. Beta Pinson. David Concepcion should be in. I was having dinner one time at the Boathouse in Cincinnati, right along 2nd Street or Pete Rose Way, very close to there. Anyway, we went to the ball game, and then we went to the Boathouse, and lo and behold, at the next table, here's a guy that's in the Hall of Fame, Luis Aparicio, and David Concepcion, who isn't in the Hall of Fame, and they're having dinner at the next table. And it's like, I can't interrupt these guys. They don't want to be interrupted.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, that dinner tasted extra special, believe me.
Wow, that's great. That's absolutely great.
Yeah. And then the other one that passed, she was 100 years old. It's a radio voice. She did a lot of radio voices. She could play an old lady. She could play a flirtatious Peggy Webber.
Yeah, Margaret Webber, yeah. Absolutely. She was in the Orson Welles stuff. She was Lady Macduff in Macbeth.
And she did a ton of stuff.
Yeah, Alfred Hitchcock. She was Alice Dennehy from The Wrong Man. She was
Dragnet. She played Joe Friday's mother.
Yeah, and M Squad. A lot of M Squad stuff. And she was from Laredo.
She was from Cincinnati.
Well, not originally. She was from Laredo, Texas, and then she grew up in Tucson and went to high school in Tucson, I think. But Laredo was the place, and then she wound up on WOAI in San Antonio, AM 1200, when she was about 12 years old, and so that was like the 40s. So,
I was given wrong information then, but yeah.
I don't know about a Cincinnati connection to her. Cincinnati connection in that when it was Avco, which owned WLW, also owned WOAI. But
some of her
years
very
later.
First work, I wasn't around, but I think some of her very first work was on LW.
Well, that would make a bit of sense. So, but she wasn't from there. She was doing that from Texas.
Okay. Not recently, but well into her 90s, she headed up. She was still working. She was the head of some kind of amateur, whatever, radio skit.
Well, she did a theater company with Bob Denver. But that was California, and she owned a restaurant and performing theater, the New Hope Inn, and that she and Ted Cassidy owned that in Santa Monica. So that I know, and she wound up moving to Japan, which was interesting because I think it was like her second or third husband. I know this is terrible, but hello. We lost him, but second or third husband. She moved to Japan because her husband was working as a researcher at the Atomic Bomb Casualty Commission. And then she wound up living in Los Angeles. And the last time I saw her name on anything was she was one of the people, when we talk about those horrible fires that were in Pacific Palisades in Malibu, she had to be evacuated during that. So that same year she turned 100, which was last September, and died in a retirement facility in Northern California, Napa. So that was earlier this month. So yeah, absolutely, I know who she is. So we will pick it up there with Bill and Nick, and hopefully you too, coming up on WGN Radio. James, are there? are the Fortunes, and it was Roger Rockford who wanted to hear that, and happy to play that, and that was 1965. We played some of the covers, including Lou Christie last night, but that was the one that hit, and that's the Fortunes. In America, that was on Press Records. If you've never heard of Press Records, why would you? It was a subsidiary of London, and that's what they used for the imprint in the States. It was on Decca in the UK, where, of course, they are from. The Fortunes were also, well, there were a couple of guys named Roger who did a lot of songwriting, but they also were David and Jonathan, a duo. So there you have that, and more of your requests coming up, I promise. Okay, so we got Nick in Baltimore. Welcome back to WGN Radio, Nick.
Hey, good morning, Raleigh. I didn't mean to call 2 days in a row like that, but wanted to ask you a question because I thoroughly enjoyed your interview with Steve.
Oh, good.
Those rare records we talk about, the rare R&B records,
mm-hmm.
and how did they handle these guys? Never got the royalties, right? I mean,
well, they never will. Okay, firstly, when you talk about royalties, you're talking about two different things, because the royalties, when we think about ASCAP and BMI and CSAC, the artist never got anything from that. That's just the writer and the publisher, period. The artist got paid by the record label, so there were never that. But if they were the writer or the publisher, then that went through the performing rights societies. Then Congress decided a while ago that, oh, no, we have to pay the artists and we have to pay the labels for reasons I don't know. But anyway, they came up with Sound Exchange, which administers it, and that pays the artists and the labels. But your question is a good one, because the bottom line, the answer is no one. The example that I always give is my favorite version of Blue Moon by the Viscounts on Shamal. No one knows what Shamal was as a label. Closest I've come is I think it's a contraction of two people's names, but I don't know. No one knows who these Viscounts are. They're not the same ones from the Bay Area or anything like that. So, of course, it goes just in the dead file when that happens. And, you know, the bottom line is that all of the real obscurities get nothing. One of the problems is that a lot of these small labels have been absorbed by bigger labels. And if they had a hit or two, like Revelot in Detroit, if they had a hit or two, well, the label that's acquiring them knows that. But they don't know anything else in the catalog. And I mentioned this before. In my book, I wanted to use that line from can't think of their names right now. The Parliaments, when they were still the Parliaments, my anger clouded my judgment, and I saw a red flash, and my mind wrote a check that my heart couldn't cash. I think those are some of the best soul lyrics ever. So I decided I'll clear the rights. Ha! I spent a year. Finally, I even talked to a bank president in Detroit who was the brother of the guy who owned Revelot and all that. But anyway, finally, someone at BMI took pity on me and said, I'll find out. And so he did. And so I don't remember now which of the conglomerates it was, but I wrote them and I said, I want rights to use a line from the Parliaments, Don't Be Sore at Me. And they wrote back and said, we don't have that record. And you know that song is not ours. Well, of course it was theirs, but they don't know it. But I just kept the answer, of course, and just went ahead and used it. So the obscurities, unfortunately, get zip.
I mean, that's a real crime.
Oh, it is a crime. Some of these people you can't find, period. And especially some of the smaller labels. So now, if someone's still alive, they can probably register the work with Sound Exchange. And if it's verified that it was them and all that, then they'd get something. But unfortunately, most of these people are not alive. Either the label owner or the artist.
Okay. When I was doing radio back in the 80s...
That was performing rights. BMI, CSAC, ASCAP. That's performing rights.
Right.
That's only the writer and the publisher. The artist...
Yeah, that's why we had to write down...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You had to, exactly.
BMI logging week.
Right, exactly. That's the way they used to do it. And as I say, the writer... And of course, the money went to the publisher. And it was up to the publisher to dole it back to the writer. And they had statutory rates at that point. It was 2 cents per selection per side when you were filling out those papers. And it's not that now. But that did not help the artist or the label.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Hang on
now,
a minute. Don't go away.
Do.
Stay where you are, and we'll pick it up right there after this on WGN Radio.
You don't know what you've got until you lose.
James Robert in Chicago wanted to hear Ral Donner on Gone Records, 1961. Yeah, interesting. I always thought that'd be a great record for Elvis, and actually, the record before it by Ral Donner was a cover of Presley record, The Girl of My Best Friend, and Gone picked it up and then re-released it, became a nationwide hit, and then they did You Don't Know What You Got Till You Lose It, which was big as well here in the States. Chicago boy, born in Norwood Park, and was on, you know, a lot of local talent shows as a kid. Had the Rockin' Five and the Gents in high school, and doing some TV stuff and some of the stuff on Alan Freed show and all that. And you know, but it really was about three hits: "Girl of My Best Friend," "You Don't Know What You Got Till You Lose It," and "She's Everything I Wanted You to Be." Yes, and he continued to record. He was on Reprise. He was on Redbird. But nothing hit. And, you know, after Elvis died, he got some interest in people who thought he sounded like him, which is, it was the voiceover narration in This Is Elvis, the film. And left us in 1984, sadly. It was lung cancer. He was only 41 years old. All right, so 888-876-5593. And we're still talking to Nick in Baltimore about music rights. So I cut you off. What else you got?
That's okay. I was just going to say, before I left WNAV, we had to do it all by hand, but now I think it's handled by a computer. It's all, you know, printed in, it's printed out, and it's on the computer. And
I'm sure that's true. I haven't been asked by BMI, ASCAP, or CSAC for an audit, you know, a couple weeks like you did, in years. None of them ask for that. So I don't know. I don't know what they're doing now. Sound Exchange, however, makes me tell them every month exactly what I played. Not that it helps them. You know, again, if they can find the Shamal label, good luck.
Well, I mean, that's what I have. But I had another question, but it was radio related.
Okay.
And I promise I'll get off. Mm. And that is the old WIBG signal.
Yeah, 990. It had a real null to the north, and the suburbs moved out that way and just killed them.
Yeah, well, we were talking to a friend of mine, and we were talking to one of the engineers over there. It's a Salem station now.
And
he said that they fixed the signal. He said that when it was Wibbage, he said they never really were up to full power at night. You know, they were 10,000 watts, but he said they were something like 8,500 or something like that. He said that their pattern was, you know, it was just not, you know, it was just messed up. So they went in and they fixed it, and they're actually the full 10,000 watts at night. But I couldn't get them at night. I got NOx here at night.
Right.
But I got them during the day.
Sure, and actually, arguably, NOx at night was a better station because Galbraith was on at night, and I loved him. But anyway, yeah, and there were, of course, a lot of good people on Wibbage, don't get me wrong, but Rob Galbraith was my man in the mid-60s. It was not so much power, as there were all sorts of things wrong with that single signal, I think, in terms of how it was engineered. But it was Storer, you know, so what do you expect? I haven't talked to anybody who has tried to, you know, pick them up in Bucks County, and that was really the weakness. You know, you could hear them fine in Philly. When South Philly kind of left the area, a lot of them went to New Jersey. That wasn't a problem. But the ones who went to Bucks County, well, that was out of the coverage area for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And FIL was much, you know, much better at night than that. But that's interesting. I don't know what Salem did, and I haven't been there to hear it, but I'd be curious.
Nah, I get them here where we live now. I get them during the day. I mean, fine, actually.
Real
They're
well
actually
in the
listenable.
In the day, I could see that, you know, in terms of that distance. I wouldn't doubt that for a minute. At night, that'd be tough. I would think
they're gone.
Yeah, they're supposed to be. You know, if they did it right, they're supposed to be. But I, now that you mention it, I'd be curious to know what they did. But I think whatever it wasn't just raising the wattage. It would have to be changing that pattern somehow.
Yeah, he said they had to readjust the pattern.
Yeah, that's what would do it, you know, because the difference between 8,800 watts and 10,000 watts is really negligible in a lot of ways. So it would, and then of course we also don't know the all important ground system, you know, because so many of these stations just spent absolutely nothing on the ground system, and that is such a factor. But actually, that signal is weird at night. A lot of it's water, because it kind of goes southeast, so it would kind of skim Dover and then go out to the Atlantic. But you know, it doesn't have anything to the north is the problem, including
the fish would get it.
Well, the fish would get it. And, you know, I mean, arguably you got no problem in South Philly at all, or parts of South Jersey at all. You know, Vineland is starting to break up, but I'd say more than anything, that's where you start to get problems. But north, that's pretty tight. You're having problems at night, even, you know, it ain't getting to Trenton very well. You know, so... So that, at least that's what, I don't know what else. And, you know, daytime, it was considerably better, but, you know, it's still directional. You know, there were separate patterns. Daytime was 50,000, nighttime was 10,000. They were absolutely separate patterns. And that transmitter site, I'm sure, has not moved, and not far from WFIL, actually.
No.
So, that's sort of where they all are, off of Ridge Pike.
Yeah, and I understand that they're in that original building.
Oh, you mean the studios? Because it wasn't at the transmitter.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. That was one thing Storer did. He had impressive buildings. And it was a brick building.
Yeah. They told us that they were still in that building.
Oh, well, that was a nice building.
I don't know. That's what I had. So I just wanted to slip in here real quick. I didn't mean to call again, but I figured, well.
I'm delighted you did.
okay.
So absolutely, we'll talk to you soon.
I enjoyed the interview with Steve.
Oh, yeah, it was fun. Yeah, and I'll look forward to hearing more
And hearing Johnny last night.
Oh, yeah, always good. All right, good deal. Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Yeah. So Lafayette Hill. Yeah, I forget the street name, but Lafayette Hill, that's where it was. 888-876-5593, 8888-RALEIGH. And what are we doing here? Nick is in Chicago. So, all right, Nick, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm awake.
Yeah, excellent.
thank you.
Excellent.
Yeah, two Nicks in a row. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm going to jump around with a few things here. Yesterday, I listen to radio when it's late, usually horizontally, meaning I'm like dozing off and I catch this and that. It has nothing to do with the show or the person on it, you know, has to do with me. But I heard you say for Nick. It caught my attention right away. I left my heart in San Francisco.
Yes.
Do you remember who the artist was who sang that? Was that Tony Bennett?
No, that is. And, you know, I listened to a lot of them because, like, almost 500 people have recorded it. And the first recording, because the record came out in 1953. And the first was a woman who used to do it on stage, Clara May. And she tried to get Tennessee Ernie Ford to do it, and he wasn't interested. And so the first recording was a woman named Seal. I don't have her version. But Tony...
it was a male.
Yeah, no. No, I'm telling you, what happened was Tony Bennett was on tour and he was going to be appearing at the Fairmont Hotel in San Francisco. And so his arranger had said, you know, how about this song? I left my heart in San Francisco. And so he did it there at the Fairmont. And of course, you know, the mayor's there and the new mayor is there as well, you know, a couple of mayors. And everybody loved it. And so Columbia at the end of 61 said, you know, you got something there. And they recorded it and it came out in early Rally 62, and it is the definitive version. There is nobody who has touched it. I mean, that is a Tony Bennett song, and believe me.
Yeah, it's not about his voice. Yeah. But was it Tony Bennett who was saying that one yesterday?
Yes, it was not only Tony. Yes, it was Tony Bennett, and it was not only his voice. What it really was the production value on that record was just excellent. And
it was good, yeah.
Yeah, and nobody, I mean, everybody and their brother did that song, literally. But I 500 versions or so. But I never heard anybody nail it like that production on Tony Bennett. And it really was a group effort. The producers involved in that were every bit of important as his voice, although his voice was great for it.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. And then I wanted to ask one other little thing. I won't go through all the stuff we got here with the newspapers. It'll take too long. You have other people waiting. But from Wednesday, that's, now it's into Thursday, but August 19th, the Chicago Sun-Times, it says in a obituary here of Frank Beard, 1949. It's my year of birth.
Right.
ZZ Top drummer. But he has no beard. They show a picture of him from 2008. I thought it was ironic. He has no beard. The other two guys they show got those long beards that they wear.
We talked at length about Frank last night. And in fact, I normally wouldn't be playing ZZ Top. But since they did, I heard it on the X. I had to play it because that was just great. He was the real deal. And, again, not my thing, but very much acclaimed. Very much acclaimed, a big success. And, an outpouring on his own. He was in hospice care. Right before he died, so he hadn't been doing that well. But the group still is touring, and they took off some time for Frank's death, and then they'll go back to it and dedicate a concert to him, probably one in Austin.
Yeah, it says here that the Rolling Stones guitar in the newspaper, Rolling Stones guitarist Keith Richards helped induct the trio into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2004, and he joked, when I first saw them, quoting Keith Richards, I thought, and then I quote him, I hope these guys are not on a run.
Right, I mentioned.
Guys is not going to work. So he must have had a beard at that time.
No, it's not that. It was the way they were dressed. But I mentioned that last night. Yeah, that they looked like disguises that wouldn't hold. Yeah. So, we talked at length.
Yeah, then about India and the snakes.
Yes.
Not India, but you talked about snakes. But in India, when the British first colonized it, it was so prevalent, like in the old movies, maybe in the late 30s and into the 40s, where they have a guy playing a flute, sitting with his legs crossed on the ground, and he takes off a cover of a small round wicker basket, and this snake rises up from it, and he's playing this flute. And the British, though, weren't used to that. You know, they were afraid of it. They actually decided to offer a reward to people.
Yeah, for every dead snake.
And what happened was
they bred them for profit.
The people learned how to help the snakes mate.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't.
Right.
If they weren't afraid of them, they would have even more snakes to keep turning in. So that's an interesting story.
Yeah.
And I'll wrap it up with this so you can get other people. Oh, the guy calls in from Covington. I guess that's Covington, Kentucky.
Yes, it is.
Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yes, it is.
If we can ask him, I'm trying to figure out. There's a man who built a famous bridge afterwards, but at that time he supposedly built a really massive, strong bridge, and it was so impressive that he was chosen to build the Brooklyn Bridge. But this bridge that he built was under the request of Abraham Lincoln at the beginning of the Civil War. From the south side of Cincinnati, Ohio, to Covington, Kentucky. So is that bridge still standing? Or if you remember to ask him, just say that. And a guy would call in. I'm amazed by that. I grew up in Brooklyn as a kid.
It's a suspension bridge. It was created in the mid 1860, like right after the Civil War, and it was wire cable technology, and that's what led him to be ahead of that Brooklyn Bridge. And at the time when it opened, it was the longest suspension bridge in the world.
Oh wow!
So unfortunately, the guy who built it died of tetanus before the Brooklyn Bridge construction really began. So he didn't actually build it, as far as that go.
He was involved with some of the beginnings of it, but his son took over, and his son got sick too.
Right, his wife got involved, Emily.
Okay, and they'd be watching the construction across the East River, and with binoculars to make sure it's going along well. But they made the foundation very solid. So anyhow,
the bridge is by the way, the bridge is still there. It's still active, both vehicular and pedestrian. So it's active.
Wow, isn't that amazing? Yeah. Well, the guy supposedly, I think I saw a picture of it once somewhere real fast. They showed. And it's just a massive thing, you know. It's something that you picture a guy from Germany who's an engineer who would want to build something that would hold up using the only thing he knew, which is just massive amounts of rock, you know.
Well, they've enhanced it over the years. And in the 1950s, this was horrible, I thought, they enhanced it with a metal grid. It was steel, a deck. And when you drive over it, your tires would have, they'd hum. It was just loud. And so a lot of people were calling it the singing bridge.
yeah, that could be something that can be annoying sometimes if you listen to, like, a radio station.
Yeah.
Then there was another thing that was I got on the radio about the Beatles. Pete Best, you know, he was the original drummer.
Yes, he was.
You know that.
They fired him.
And then Richard Starkey, who became Ringo Starr, was brought on to it, you know, because I forgot which one. The one had that who got shot. He felt that Pete Best was too conventional.
No, they all thought that he wasn't that professional, that he wasn't that good. But it was Brian Epstein who fired him. But the band requested it. The boys requested it after their EMI audition, and so they just felt he wasn't up for it. And it took Pete Best by surprise. And of course, he later released some records like Best of the Beatles and all that. But nothing really ever hit.
Yeah, and then the last thing is that. About Pete Best, he ended up working in England.
Who?
Working for
who is this?
10 years. Pete Best.
Okay.
He ended up working for 10 years, according to this thing I heard on the radio, for the unemployment department. I guess there was something wrong.
There was another thing about him, if you really dig deep, and that he was... John's in here saying, shut up, I will hear in a moment. He was using... pills. I'm trying to clean it up as best I can, but there was a substance problem.
Oh, okay. All okay.
Right.
I'll let you move on because I know you got
I got commercials, but thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank
That's
you.
Right.
Okay. Sorry about
yes,
that.
Yes, WGN is a for-profit station, so we'll pick it up right here in moments right there on WGN Radio.
Come and listen in to a radio station where the mighty hosts of heaven sing. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
If you want to hear the songs of Zion coming from the land of endless spring,
get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Listen to the music in the air.
Turn your radio on.
Heaven's glory share.
Turn the lights down low.
Turn the lights down low.
Listen to the Master's radio.
Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Listen to the songs of the fathers and the mothers and the many friends gone on before. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Some eternal morning we shall meet them over on the Hallelujah shore.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Listen to the music in the air.
Turn your radio on.
Glory share.
Turn the lights down low.
Turn the lights down low.
And listen to the Master's radio.
Get in touch with God.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. That's the Statler Brothers version, 1993, and that's when Marty and Whiting wanted to hear. We played him the hit last night, which was Ray Stevens, and Ray Stevens did have it as a hit in 1971, but of course, this song goes back to 1939. And Lulu Bell and Scotty, remember them well. And along the way, everybody, Al Brumley, I think Al Brumley actually wrote it, and he finally did record it in the 60s. So a long time later, but Roy Acuff and John Hartford and, you know, a bunch of people, but there, J.D. Sumner, you name it. There it is, 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh and Bill in Chicago, if he's still with us, welcome back to WGN Radio.
How you doing, Raleigh?
All right, thanks for waiting.
That's okay. The reason I called you, the gentleman from Muskegon, Michigan, you were mentioning the station out of Darrell, Texas. That brought memories back when I was a kid in the late 40s and early 50s. My parents used to listen to that station all the time. We lived south of Fort Wayne, Indiana, about 20 miles, and we'd get the station at night. They'd listen to the different religious programs
right.
on there.
Sure.
That they had. And I understood that I was told that if you went near that antenna over in Mexico, his transmitter, your hair would stand up on end.
Well,
it was so powerful.
Yeah, those stations were interesting when the station X-Rock, when they became X-Rock in 1973, I remember the jocks took, fluorescent light tubes, which became lightsabers, because of course they lit up. So yeah. But, you know, when you're talking about high-power stations, and the highest we had in the States was the experimental years of WLW when they were 500,000 watts. And I'll tell you, they got a lot of complaints because the lights would never go off in the barns near Mason, you know, and people were hearing them in the day in Hawaii, and you know, on and on it goes. So yeah, that's the beauty of AM. It propagates so nicely, especially off the ionosphere layer at night. Yeah.
Right. And also, you happened to mention, what's his name? Wolfman.
Yes.
He is on rebroadcast of his shows
on on WGN. Absolutely.
Yeah, WGN
true.
from 2:00 a.m. till 5:00 a.m. Sunday morning
after
in Michigan, that'd be 3 to 6.
After Steve and Johnny.
Right, after Steve and Johnny, they play the old Wolfman shows.
Yeah.
And also, you mentioned different people. I remember back in the 50s in Indianapolis with Bouncing Bill Baker and Jim Shelton and Easy Gwynn, and I knew Dick Summer real well, and then Bernie Herman on WIREF Nightbeat.
Sure.
Those were the shows you listened to back then.
Yeah, absolutely.
But otherwise, I just thought I'd mention that I happened to hear you talking to the gentleman from Muskegon, Michigan, talking about, and then Wolfman as well. Just telling him that Wolfman is on if he wants to hear what he sounded like.
Yes, well, what he sounded like in more recent years, that was recorded not during the time he was on XCRF, obviously.
It wasn't during that time. I think it was when he was on the station in Chicago for a while.
It was after XCRB even. It was something they syndicated.
Well, he was somewhere in the 80s or 70s.
Yeah, and
70s,
he was 80s. Right. He was doing that out of L.A. Yep.
Right, because he plays a lot of the 60 music.
Yep.
70 music. That's mainly what it is. Sometimes you'll get into late 50s music.
Yep.
But I thought I'd let you know that was going on.
Yeah, good plug. Glad you did.
I still listen to you every night. I just don't.
Well, we're glad to have you anytime you want.
Okay, can I ask you a question?
I'll try to answer it.
Okay. Have you ever heard from Jim in Richmond? I haven't heard him for a while. What's he doing?
No, I'll tell you, it was a little bit of tough love. Where it is we'd love to hear from Jim any time that he is making gains toward his independence because, we've been on it a long time and there doesn't really seem to be much gains there. So,
I know what you mean because I would hear him and I'd think to myself because I'm totally blind myself now, but for about the last 10 years. But the thing of it is, you can't just give up.
Well, and you got to
do stuff or get people to help you do stuff, to teach you how to do the stuff so you can do it.
Well, and that's been right, and that's been it. He's been tremendously dependent on people to help him through his daily chores, but he's basically not any more independent than he was a few years ago. So we said, hey, anytime you've made an independent gain, you're doing something on your own, we want to hear about it. But other than we don't. And so you know, there comes a point. I can't tell you how much email I got from people who are just, I don't want to hear it, you know, because
yeah, I know sometimes I would hear it too, and I would say, oh, come on.
Yeah, right. Get a grip. Right. Well, and it's really tough because some of the decisions he'll have to make that we've talked about, you know, where he is not conducive to living independently. And that's, you know, that's something that he'll have to come to grips with. But, you know, you know, a couple of years later when there's no change, we figured, well, call us when there is.
Okay. I was just curious. I haven't heard him for quite a while.
Yeah, that's what the deal
is. And also another person I used to hear once in a while. I've heard her for a while. I think she's here in Chicago. I think was her nickname Tubby or something like that?
I haven't heard from Tubby in a little while either. I hope she's okay. That's true. You mention it, it's been a while. Yeah, time moves on, but you're right. That is a concern. I agree.
Right. I just wonder whatever happened, if their people are still, if they're sick somewhere or something happened to them or not. Cause
I hope she's okay. Maybe she'll check in.
Maybe so. All right, well, I'll let you go then. So
thanks for calling.
I'll holler about Wolfman Jack.
Yes, I'm glad you brought it up. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. Perfect to get a plug for WGN carrying the you know, the old syndicated show. And I think, I think he did those like in the late 80s maybe. But in any event, we have Floyd in Florida. Welcome back to WGN Radio. Are you still with us, Floyd?
Yeah, really. This is Floyd from Iowa. This is a group, or a couple of duo, I guess it's Brewer and Shipley. They had a song called, I thought they were saying One Toe.
No, it's One Toe, One Toke Over the Line. It was about drugs, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know. And I didn't catch it. I thought it was a religious song.
Yeah, because it says Sweet Jesus. Yes, right. It's not. Yes.
And then what happened was, apparently this Lawrence Welk group got a hold of that. They sang that on the air. And I thought, well, it's just completely innocent. But I heard that the FBI investigated.
No, this can't be. This can't be right.
Well, that's what I thought too. I thought that's impossible. Lawrence Welk is just as homespun as any group can get. And the of course, it was during the time of what's his name, Hoover. But this business, Guy and Rolna sang it, and I thought that's impossible because these folks are just as down to earth, homespun in North Dakota. Just folks.
Well,
that anybody can get.
There's a lot of So Lawrence Welk was absolutely squeaky clean, and to such an extent, he fired people if they were wearing dresses too short or anything like that.
Yep.
So you know, they did the song. You're right, and they missed the drug reference. They didn't understand it entirely, and they just focused.
I didn't get it either.
Sweet Jesus.
I missed it too.
And so, what was funny, and I'll bet you there's still a clip on this, is that he introduced it as a modern spiritual. So,
my word.
It's just hilarious. So,
And I thought the same thing, Rolly. He's just thinking about Jesus being getting his trials and tribulations and such as that.
It's not Sweet Jesus in the sense they were thinking.
Yeah. Well, Rolly, the tune was catchy. The instrumental bit of it, that when they come on, they sing their harmony.
Yeah.
It just took me by surprise. Actual meaning of it because of one word.
Well, no, I mean, there's more than that one word. But in any event, if you know all the lyrics, but it did take Lawrence Welk by surprise. But no, the only song, to my knowledge, that the FBI actually investigated and they spent years was Louie Louie.
Don't say Louie Louie.
It was.
That thing. Silly.
Well, it was. You know what it was? The original was, the guy who wrote it was Richard Berry, and his version was very nice, and you could understand every word. Well, the Kingsmen were not particularly adept, I'm being kind. And so, you know, you couldn't understand half what they said. And so, of course, it immediately became this big thing coast to coast where everybody said it's a dirty record. And in fact, the best was WTMA in Charleston when Jack Gale was is there, had this thing where they said, send us a postcard and we'll send you all the four-letter words in Louie Louie. And they got more answers. They got more postcards than anything else they ever did. And, of course, they sent it back and it were words like ship and boat and, you know, all sorts of four-letter words, but none of them were dirty because none was dirty. But, you know, it was the best thing that happened to the Kingsmen because that actually was a sucky song. But when people thought that it was just filthy, when kids thought that, it became a huge hit.
Hey, whatever. This is something different. WGN, they were also a superstation for television.
Oh,
cable TV took off.
Right.
There was a guy that had a show on there, Bob Cromie, the Cromie Circle.
Okay.
Now, he's probably gone now. I tried to look him up on the internet, and he keeps coming up with some guy, maybe it's his father. Way back in the 1800s, that can't be the same guy. I'm thinking this must be his dad or maybe a grandfather. Bob Cromie had an interview show on that station. I only caught that by accident the first time. I don't think I seen it very often. Maybe about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I'd get off work, and I'd just go to sleep in the recliner in front of the TV. I'd wake up, and there he'd be.
Yeah, he was a reporter for the Tribune. And he's been dead since like around 1999 or 2000. But he did have Cromie Circle, which actually was somewhat syndicated as far as to some degree. But anyway, yeah, GN like WOR and WTBS were considered to be the quote unquote superstations, of course.
Oh, they were. And Raleigh, can you help me up, or can you do this? Can you play that One Toe? Is that the title of that song, One Toe Over the Line?
One Toe. It's One Toke, T-O-K-E.
Oh, my goodness. You do that?
Well, I normally wouldn't because it's a horrible song. I remember it, so I had to play it ad nauseum when it was a hit. But sure. I'll play it for you, and we'll go over the lyrics after it, since you seem to be confused. All right, thanks. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Bye.
Okay, bye. All right, so 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. Kind of miss that because, of course, a euphemism for that train taking me home. You know, a lot of gospel songs like How Long Has That Train Been Gone? Oh, I love that, actually. And others, kind of a metaphor for going to heaven. Well, in this case, it's going to hell. It's a song about excess. And it's considered to be the stoner song of the decade. Yeah, well, 71 it came out. But the reality is it was basically that you're so stoned that things are not good. And and talks about learned a pain that my mama said if I should choose to make a part of me would surely strike me dead. Well, he was pretty much on the way at that point. So that's what it was. So yeah, indeed. All right, 888-8. I never thought I'd be explaining One Toke Over the Line to anybody. 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. Eduardo in Tampa, what is up tonight?
Yeah, good evening. I missed your show on Tuesday.
Yeah. But, where were you?
Just making sure other people were talking about
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
Non-political, like yes. I like to do.
Yes. Absolutely.
Actually, I was calling somebody from Chicago right before your show.
Good.
And so that's why I'm calling in late. But tomorrow,
yes,
I'm not calling anybody. And the first person I'm going to call, as far as radio show, is guess who?
Well,
your show.
Well, thank you. We're going to celebrate National Radio Day, are we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you could say that.
Okay.
But I was going to talk about, real quickly, Ellsworth, Maine, Autumn Mowry, 24 years old, candle. John says he sort of this candle pin bowling.
Oh, candle pin bowling. Yeah, very big in Boston.
Yeah, this one's in Maine.
Yeah,
she took over the business. They owed money, and she took over. She married the yeah. guy that, I guess, partnered up with him. He owed him some game shop.
Okay.
And so now they own the place.
Well, good enough. Why not? And I think they're doing an outreach because they want to have people financially support the nostalgia of the world's oldest known candle pin setter machine still in use. That is the deal. And it's not a big thing. I don't know. They got, 10 lanes or something? So they're pretty much full all the time. Mm-hmm. You got a book as far as that goes. But so it's small, but it's down home and kind of cute. And, yeah, candle pin bowling, not my thing, but in the Northeast, especially Boston, it is the way to bowl.
Yeah, and it's good to see a young person like that, you know, kind of be responsible and, you know, be kind of like the manager of the place.
Yeah, sure.
I think it's a good story, yeah.
Yeah. Now, have you ever seen candlepin bowling?
No.
All right.
I mean...
Well, here's the deal. It's not...
like a regular bowling? Yeah.
No, it's not like regular bowling. It uses
yeah.
a ball that's, you know, maybe 5 inches across at most. There's no finger holes in it. And the pins don't look the same. They're tall, thin things. And you get three uh-huh. rolls per frame. And, of course, the balls are notoriously different and the pins are notoriously different as far as that goes. You know, they also leave. They don't sweep away the fallen pins during your three tries.
Okay.
So they leave them on the lane. And so they can be hit by the ball to help knock more pins down. So it's kind of cumulative. So in three rolls, maybe you can get them all. But the reality is it's harder because of the ball being so small and the pins being so thin. And there's never been a perfect game in candle pin history.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, we're bowling perfect games. 300 games are fairly common. So, yeah, it's what can I tell you? It's Maine. But real
yeah.
real big in Boston and areas like that. And, you know, I guess it's whatever you get used to, but it's almost like not the same sport.
Yeah. Hey, tomorrow I'll tell you about three universities, I guess, that are got their students at Brandon Hospital.
Whoa, okay.
Pretty interesting. Yeah, I mean, it feels like a classroom, but, yeah, I feel like Galen, Kaiser, Rasmussen, all three of them, just people from young people from there.
Huh.
Interesting.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, good deal.
I'll talk about it tomorrow. So
okay.
We're about to run out of time.
Yes, I am,
okay,
actually.
Thank
good
you,
to talk to you. Thanks.
Call.
Appreciate
thank
it. All right. And apologies to James. We'll get to his stories. He has some good ones, too, tomorrow night. Yes, it is a National Radio Day. I'll celebrate by showing up, and you'll celebrate by calling, and I'll look forward to that. Until then, that's a wrap. We thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. We thank Steve Probst for joining us in the first hour and Stan for calling in. We'll do it all again 21 hours from now. I'm Raleigh James, it's WGN Radio.
Body double, plus dirty work, and Rail Raider rattled. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 news, real stories, real fun. Pully's Academy, key clone flops. Reports of a body and a piece of luggage by the side of the road down under has led to a real doubt-back mistake rouse in Australia. Police Academy spree brought a flurry of fuzz to the scene, but after close to a day of intense investigation, it was announced drop-dead gorgeous was really a discarded sex doll. Fake femme fatale looked very realistic, reports Captain Crocodile Dundee. Suitcase closed. Junk Food Funky, Down and Dirty DoorDash Disorder Due to Some Dirtbag Delivery Deviant, Cleveland.com reports. Cops say the filthy animal pulling in to pick up his package at Panera got caught by workers. They're putting his paws down, his pants. Staffers so sickened they directed him to disregard the delivery. That's when the dirty dog became belligerent, purportedly pushing one worker and trying to grab the order. Cops cuffed the clown very carefully. The Great Train Flobbery. A rolling rail robbery ripped through California's Cajon Pass, where five freight felons allegedly figured they'd found the perfect payday. Deputies say one bandit blasted bullets from a moving train at railroad police, missing his mark. By Wednesday, five men were behind bars, burglary tools reportedly riding shotgun. The suspected shooter faces attempted murder charges. Apparently their getaway train had a one-way ticket to the Hoosgow. And that's what's happening. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News.